Hey, welcome to the show. This is episode number one of the Rusick Podcast. Today, our guest is Zach Wilde. Zach is a good friend of ours. He's a songwriter based out of Massachusetts. Check it out.
What? What was wrong with that?
We're I don't know. She's just getting stuff squared away. Who knows?
Yeah. Open with P. Diddy.
Have you been writing stuff recently, man?
Yeah.
Yeah. What have you been working on?
I don't know. I've just been writing a lot, honestly. Yeah. It comes in waves.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. I start with like small ideas. Mm. Get like hooks, and then build them from there.
It's funny. I feel like I ask every songwriter this, whether or not I have a microphone in front of them or not, but I'm just always curious. Do you start with lyrics or melody first, or is it a combination? Cause for me, it's like, there's no theory to it. There's no, routine to it. It's just completely random, whatever the song is.
I'll figure out a line and then kind of grow it from there. So I'll get kind of a melody based around there. I'll hear kind of something in my head. Yeah. I usually kind of hear it before I fucking can go through and write it. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I think I probably do something similar to that. I feel like for me, it's usually a line first, and maybe you can vouch for the same thing, but it's usually like a line that'll have some kind of melody attached to it. And then it's like, the way I always think about this is going to sound insane. This is just because I overthink all of this stuff. The way that I always imagine songwriting is I imagine it like pieces of a puzzle coming through a door. And for the longest time, especially when I was younger, I used to think that the songs that would show up whole, because it's happened to all of us rarely in our life, where all of a sudden we sit down and 90 seconds later, there's the song. And you just think, how the hell did that happen? Like you don't know how that happened, but it's there in entirety. And I used to think that meant that the puzzle itself that you just put together was of better quality. And then as I've gotten older and I've just done it more, I've realized that the pieces just come through the door at different times. And to me, that's the fun part of it, is saying, oh, this thing, I think this actually goes with this other thing that I was working on. And like, oh, maybe these pieces fit together. And when I think about it like that, it makes far more sense to me. And it's also less pressure. Not that you don't want to be strict about it, and not that you don't want to, you know, work your ass off at it, but it's less pressure to just jam everything together in the moment. I don't know if that makes sense, but it's the only way that I can kind of square it in my mind when I think about songwriting.
Hank Williams said, if it takes you longer than 15 minutes to write a song, that's not worth writing.
Definitely some truth in that.
I do feel like
I don't abide by that,
but I think there's probably some truth in it. Yeah.
I feel like the best shit, I don't write too much these days, but the best things I have ever written is always the stuff that just like comes out with little to no effort, where I'm not really even thinking about it. It's just like writes itself almost. And then the stuff where you're like trying really hard to piece everything together and it takes you a long time and you're trying to force something out, like it's never as good.
That's why the heavy stuff is always the best stuff, though.
What do you mean by the heavy stuff?
Like the sadder songs, the more heartbreak stuff, because it's almost like you desperately need to write that to like get it out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I get what you mean. So instead of having to think of, you're not even thinking about it. You're trying to get rid of it. So you're just trying to get that emotion.
Yeah, it's
out.
Like
so
a way you're trying
songs,
to get off you.
Some of the best songs ever are all really sad, and it's because it was like a get rid of. Almost. Not even like a think about. It was like, I need to do this.
Yeah, I've never thought about that. That's a very good way of framing it. Yeah, that really is. Yeah, songs are... I'm always fascinated by it because I don't know how much of it is... I don't know how much of it is me processing something, and I don't know how much of it is, you know what I mean?
Like, it's all us processing something.
but really though, that's kind of the calculus that's constantly going on in my head. I think for me too, because I, you know, at this point in my life, I write really exclusively in character. So I'm always wondering like how much of this is me self-medicating, you know what I mean? Like how much of this is me, sort of inflicting self-therapy upon myself, and how much of it is just the exercise of doing that. It's hard to tell, but I think you're right.
Have I ever told you my description of Nashville?
No.
at its base. So music is therapy, right? Mm-hmm. At its core, which means that musicians, writers, we're all kind of fucked up and hurt. And we're trying to heal, right?
That makes sense.
I would also venture out on a limb, say, and I include myself and both of y'all in this, but most musicians have some sort of like level of like autism or on the spectrum.
Probably.
So Nashville is like 65 to 100,000 severely hurt autistic people.
That's honestly probably more of a statement. Really?
That sounds about right.
I mean,
more of a comment,
out,
really.
And you zoom out, and it's a bunch of people that are all just trying to heal and work through all that stuff. And you got to think like all the different ways of processing and healing stuff.
What year did you get here?
2016.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
What year did we get here? That was about the same.
No, we got here 2018.
2018.
Yeah,
we got here
2018.
Yeah, I moved here right after school.
So, so you were out in Massachusetts, right? Like mm-hmm. You'd gone to school out there too, because that's where you're from originally. We haven't really talked about this in depth. We've talked about particular stories, but what was that era of your life like? Not to sound too interviewish over here, but like, what was that part of your life like?
I don't know. It was kind of wild.
Brian, shut up.
I came down here and, I wrote and worked with Daryl Scott, hung around with him for a couple weeks, and he's a fantastic songwriter. I mean, he's wrote so many good songs. And I had wanted to pursue music, but I'd never really thought of coming here, and I came down here and hung around with him and got to actually like experience it, and I was just like, I love Tennessee. Like, I like Nashville. I love Nashville, but I like the state.
Me too.
Yeah, it's so pretty and just such nice, kind people. Like,
did you know at that point then, okay, I'm getting out of Massachusetts?
Oh yeah. Well, I already known for a while I didn't want to be there. I was sick of the cold and the snow, and I don't know. I came down south a bunch growing up, and I liked it more down there.
Yeah.
Here.
Interesting. Yeah. So when you were out there, that's when you, I don't know if you started performing out there, but you were performing quite a bit out in Massachusetts, right? Like that was kind of, that was where you really got your chops up.
Yeah. I street performed a lot and played a bunch of little clubs and small spots all over the state. I did a lot. I was a lot of Eastern Massachusetts, Cape Cod, like that region. Mm. And then I moved down here and just kind of started branching out and going all over the place.
What was the rest of Mass like to play? Because, I mean, we really exclusively played in Boston when we were there. It was very, very infrequent that we would ever venture really outside of the city. I mean, there's times where we would tour, but if we were touring, we weren't playing. If we were in Massachusetts, we were probably playing Boston, you know? What was the rest of the state like to play?
I'd go to, like...
Or Commonwealth, excuse me.
Go to NoHo out in Western Mass, like Northampton, Iron Horse, spots out that way. Forget this one spot. There's this tiny little spot out there outside of Northampton. My sister loves telling this story.
It's probably very embarrassing for Zach.
No, it's it is kind of embarrassing. I wish I had fucking taken her advice. But she was like, there's this cool country show that's going on. There's this cool country show going on out Western Mass. Do you want to come out? I have an extra ticket. And I was like, I'm playing a show tonight. I can't go. She was like, okay, he's going to be great. So her and her friends like hopped in a truck and went out and saw this guy play to like 15 people. And then, I don't know, I'd been here for like probably 4 or 5 years. And she calls me and was like, hey, you remember that guy I saw out in Western Mass, that dive bar? And I was like, yeah. She's like, yeah, he's on TV. I was like, oh, no way. And she was like, yeah, his name's Tyler Childers. And she saw him on his first tour in the Northeast, playing this tiny little dive in Western Massachusetts. Still has videos of it too.
Oh, that's wild.
Of him like playing to like a handful of people.
That's really cool.
I don't think he could walk around there anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, I regret not going and seeing that show. That would have been a really cool one.
Yeah. I mean, how would have you have known though? You know,
I mean, I don't even think he had a record out.
Yeah.
I think he was still working on his first record.
That's pretty, yeah, because that would have been what year? That would have been what, 2015, probably somewhere around there?
2013 or 2014.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah, probably around that time period.
Wow.
But yeah, she saw him play solo to like a tiny little spot, and I was like, oh,
that's wild. You missed it, man. You missed it. What the hell?
I got to play the show and make the money. So. Not too much love loss.
What? How long did it take you to feel like you found, and not that this is ever like a final thing that you ever feel like, okay, I'm here now, but how long did it take you to feel like once you got out to Nashville that you found your crew, that you found your people?
Oh, God. I don't know.
Yeah. Still, you're still sussing people out?
Yeah. I don't know. You meet so many people. You know so many people.
Yeah.
Especially after you've been here 8 years.
Yeah. Like
you meet thousands of people, obviously playing music and running around town and then going out into the world and, you know. But I think I found like a solid crew over the last few years. I think the house has really done a lot.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. That's, yeah, a lot of people have played under that roof.
Shout out.
And slept under that roof.
Yeah. Shout out 415 Edwin Street. Where the honky tonk rebirth happened.
Yeah. No, a lot of people have slept in that house. A lot of people have cut records in that house. Yeah.
You just put your address out to a bunch of people on the internet.
They can figure it out.
Do you want us to beep it out?
Nah, dude. Just don't. If you show up, bring good weed.
Yeah, just be cool.
Bring good weed.
Just be cool. Yeah, bring good weed and be cool.
And don't stay longer than 3 days.
That's a very generous amount of time.
Yeah, man. When I was homeless, they gave me that. I stayed there. Everyone slept on that couch.
Yeah, well, when you first got to town, what were the first spots that you played or hung out in? Because I feel like, I mean, we moved here a couple years after that, so we've only been here 6 years. And I feel like in that time, so much of it's changed.
Back with Crying Wolf.
Okay, yeah.
I used to play Crying Wolf back when that venue was awesome. I liked that spot. And the little setup in the back. We did the 5 spot a lot. D's when it opened, which was, I think, 6.5 or 7 years ago. We started playing at D's when that first opened up. I don't know, there was like a bunch of spots. We did a lot. We went out to Knoxville and played. Like playing, what was it called? Preservation Pub.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good spot.
That is a good spot. That's a fun spot.
Yeah.
I like that place.
They haven't played there in years, but it's a good spot.
They have this awesome picture on the wall from, I think it was like 6 or 8 months before Chris Stapleton released his Traveler record, and it was him playing with a 3-piece at that spot.
That's really cool.
So there's probably like, I don't know, how many people can they hold in there? 75?
Not yet, 80? Not many. Not many. It's
a cool little club.
It is. And the people there are super nice too.
Yeah, they've had some crazy acts go through there too.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, we did a tour with, so that was the Wolf Sisters tour. We did that, right? So that was probably 2018. Yeah. It's a fun, it's been a while. It's a fun one.
If I remember correctly, the local radio station, WKXB.
There you go. I was not going to pull that out of my ass.
Not the one that does the blue plate thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They are.
I did that once.
Did you really? Who did you do that with?
Hunter.
Nice. That's
wait,
awesome.
No. It was this guy, Michael Shaw. Never mind.
Michael Shaw?
Hunter was going to do it, and I ended up not doing it with him.
I don't know the name Michael Shaw.
He doesn't live here anymore. He moved. But
gotcha.
This guy I was playing with for a little bit.
Were you ever doing Sideman stuff when you got here, or was the intent always, no, I'm doing my own stuff?
I've never been like good enough to be a side man.
You know what you are, man.
I know.
Everyone needs a rhythm guitar player.
I know my lane, dude. I know my lane. I can sing it right.
Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
Those tunes you played. I've heard those, but that second one you did is a really good song.
Thank you.
The new stuff you've been doing. I mean, don't get me wrong. The old stuff is great too, but the new stuff is.
I'm hoping to have it out next year.
Good.
Cut and released. Yeah, I did a music video that I released like a month and a half ago. And we put that out as a single and we put it out as like a music video and did good.
Nice.
People liked it. We did it in a creek.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that one. Yeah.
Yeah, out in Ashland City.
Nice.
Little Marrowbone Creek.
Very cool.
Yeah, beautiful area.
Yeah, what do you like around Nash itself, what are some of your favorite spots? Like outside of the city, I mean.
I like going out to Jolton. I like White's Creek a lot. White's Creek's beautiful. It's got a place called the Fontanelle out there. It used to be like a performance center.
The mansion thing is.
Mm-hmm. I forget who.
Done some hikes around there.
I forget who. There's this big female country singer that owned it and lived in it for a long time.
Didn't they used to like shoot movies in there or something?
I think so. I think, what's his name? John Rich owns some of it now.
Hmm.
And some of the guys, I think from Mel, I don't know. There's partners that they had. Yeah. It's a really pretty, I mean, it's a giant log cabin essentially inside.
It's like a hiking trail that goes around it.
Yeah. I need to check
you
that
out. You can find some really
cool. Think I've ever been.
It's super close. Yeah, it's like maybe, 20 minute drive?
It's 15 from me.
Yeah, it's not far at all.
You can find some cool fossils. Go.
There's like
get on your hands and knees and crawl through a creek and find some cool stuff out there.
They put, there you go. Somebody Mike put like a bunch of little garden gnomes all over the place.
Yeah.
Like you'll be hiking around and you'll see a little garden gnome in the distance.
I may actually have a picture of one of the gnomes.
There's a bunch of them out there. Yeah, like if you're looking for them, you'll see a bunch.
You'll find them.
I don't know what the story behind that was, but.
So, you got here, you started playing around as quickly as you could. Who were some of the first people you kind of hooked up with out here that you found like, okay, these people are kind of doing something similar to what I want to be doing?
Well, I was doing a Southern rock group for a while.
Really?
We were playing together until COVID, and then COVID happened, and we all kind of went our own separate ways.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Huh.
It was very fun. Cool. It was a good time.
What kind of Southern rock are you doing?
It was like Allman Brothers.
Oh, hell yeah.
Kind of stuff.
Nice.
Yeah.
What?
Nothing.
Did you know that?
No, I did know that.
There you go.
I was just laughing, Casey.
It was fun.
Oh, thank you for that, Brian. That's really why you're here, is just to put me in my place constantly.
I remember we were out and playing this spot in Huntsville, Alabama, and there wasn't like...
What is that?
I don't know what that was. I was the ice maker.
Oh,
I was
like, what is that? The ice maker.
You're playing the spot.
In Huntsville, Alabama. Huntsville's weird. It's cool, but it's weird because there's like, it's a college town with NASA. So you have like a bunch of college kids and a bunch of rocket scientists hanging around. So we play
a combination.
Yeah. So we play this spot. And I don't know, there wasn't really a lot of people there, but we had a lot of fun and they had a lot of fun. And after the show, we all kind of were, I don't know, we were all talking and stuff. And like two of the guys in the band were single at the time and they were both flirting with chicks. And the other three of us were loading stuff up and we were like, let's eat and get out of here. And they're like, well, they can have their moment. And one of the guys comes up and he looks horrified and was like, we got to go. He's like, we got to go right now. And I was like, oh God, what happened? He's like, we gotta go. So we already had everything packed up. We grab our other buddy and we get in the car and we were like, you gotta tell us what happened. And he goes, that lady knew the nuclear codes. And I was like, what? She was like, she works for NASA and she definitely knows the nuclear codes. And it freaked me. I'm freaked out. And he was shook by it.
That's fucking wild. Hilarious.
We ran out of Huntsville.
Man.
Alabama.
That's probably safe.
It's a fun state, dude. Yeah. Go down and play Birmingham.
Birmingham's cool.
Yeah,
I like Birmingham.
I used to play this little venue called the Nick. I don't know if it's still there or not, but there was this old head that used to hang around there and come talk to us that he would always tell us the same story that he took acid with Tom Petty back in the 70s there. And like nobody knows if it's real or not, but he tells it pretty
convincingly.
And he's every time it was pretty spot on.
Interesting.
He was in the same cycle.
Yeah, those are the best. Honestly, I think the best parts of being a musician is just the stories. The weird situations that you find yourself in. Those are my favorite part of all
this. It's all in the old timers here, dude. All the old timers in Nashville have the wildest stories from way back in the day. After they pass the age of 75, they don't care.
Yeah.
They don't care.
All on the table.
No. Yeah, it really is. Like the ones that survived that era that are still around. Like some of those guys from Tales from the Tour Bus, like on camera, they'll tell the, tell the stories, but there's some real wild ones that they don't tell on camera.
I'm sure. What are some of your favorite, just weird things you've encountered along the way on the road? Any favorites?
Weird things along the road?
Or just bizarre.
There's this one crackhead in Memphis that used to really like our band.
She was like this like 70-year-old lady.
And she'd she would come up and so she
you hit that, right?
Dude, she'd flirt with us so hard. And she'd be sitting there, she'd be like, I've had so many musicians, I could have an orchestra. And we would just be like, oh my God. She had a grand old time though.
That's good. That's good. You gotta
horrible,
live a little
horrible place.
I thought you say horrible lay.
No, it was a really bad spot. It was not, I don't know. How about we say not safe?
That's fair. You're gonna say something else, but
no, let's say not safe. Not safe.
Yeah, those are my favorite part of doing all this is just the weird things that happen.
West Memphis. Yeah. It was a rowdy time.
It's been a long time since I've been to Memphis, but here not so good things lately.
Yeah.
Great food, great music, nice people.
Well, that's the important stuff then. There you go.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Blue City Cafe, best gumbo you'll have in the state of Memphis. They have a little old lady that works the front there that's been there for like 35 years, and she's just bossing everyone around, and nobody questions her because she's been there. She's like a staple in that place. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like hanging around Memphis. Sometimes.
Yeah, road stories are the best. They really are. Do you remember that time we were on the road and we stopped at that hotel and Nick, our drummer, sat outside. We were, oh my God, I forgot about that. Yeah, rest in peace, Nick. Nick Iden was a great guy. Really good drummer, too. Horrible to be on the road with, though, but love that guy, but just the worst guy to be on the road
There's
with.
There's always that one guy.
But we did this tour. It was like an East Coast tour. I'm trying to think how far south we went, but anyway. I don't even remember what state we were in, but one night I got off the rails and I said, okay, I usually wouldn't drink much when I was on the road, but I was like, fuck it. I'm going to get really drunk tonight. So I sort of let everyone know I'm getting really drunk tonight. And
if I don't get to have a good night, nobody gets to have a good night.
Brian's got to fill in some of the story. Cause God knows this was all told to me, but we got to this hotel. It was motel. And it was just, I mean, it was not the hotel or the motel you wanted to be staying at that night. So like sketchy.
Sketchy. And it was us characters. There was like a group of guys like outside, and I think they were all doing blow. and they were out all night. No, so, like so
we get
in
to
the morning.
We get to the hotel, right? I totally forgot about the story. We get to the motel. I want to go in and sign us in because I'm that kind of drunk. And they're like, Casey, you're not allowed out of the car, right? And we're on tour. It's us. And so it's us. And then it's this other band that we're on tour with. That's three sisters and Nick. And so we've got quite a few women with us. So we booked two rooms. And the girls are going to stay in one room. And we're going to stay in the other. And they're like connecting rooms. And we get in there. And I get in there, lay on the bed, and just pass out. I'm out for the rest of the night, right? And what I'm told happens, and Brian can clear some of this up, is so Nick, the drummer, who, again, just great guy, who we've since lost, but he didn't want to go to sleep. He was kind of freaked out by the motel. So he gets a chair from out of the motel and sticks it in the outside of the front door. And it's just what, cause it's like this big kind of horseshoe parking lot and everyone's up for no reason. It's like 2 a.m. and everyone's up. And so he just sticks this chair in front of the motel.
Cause the room over next to us was like a bunch of older, probably like mid-40s dudes with like these big ass trucks, just all coked out of their minds and like drinking a bunch of beer. And then one of them had
No. So that's what I was going to say. So Nick is like seeing this dog run around the parking lot. And he's like, what in the fuck is that? And some guy comes out of the motel, one of the other motel rooms across the way, and he starts yelling at the thing. And the thing comes back in and goes in there. And Nick at first is like, that, what the fuck? He thinks it's some kind of like weird dog. And I don't remember if the guy
was like a dingo. Right?
It was a dingo. The guy's like, that's not a dog. That's a fucking dingo.
This was like not a domesticated animal.
The guy had a dingo in the motel parking lot that he brought into the. Anyway, and so the next morning, I wake up very well rested. And Nick's like, I didn't sleep at all last night. He's like, I just sat outside this motel room and didn't sleep at all. So we get on the road and he is just, you know, miserable, not having a good time. And Brian is bringing all kinds of levity to the situation as usual. And at some point we find out that not only was it the just sketchiest motel we could have picked, but then all of the girls in the other room all got bed bugs. We're like, okay, that's a pretty bad one.
I don't know. There's the hotel stories from tours are always the the ones that are the most interesting.
Exactly. I forgot. I hadn't thought about that in years. That is hilarious. It was a dingo. It was a fucking dingo.
Wild.
Man.
I'm not going to go into detail, but.
Okay. That's how you know it's going to be a good story.
I don't know if I've told you this story. I may have told you the story. I was on the road at some point and, I got locked on a hotel roof for 11 hours and all I had was a bathrobe.
how tall was the roof?
It was like 2.5 stories up.
Damn.
Like, it was like a roof.
How did that happen?
Details, Brian. Those are details.
I went up there to go in just like I was at a festival and going up there just like, it was like 11 o'clock at night and I was like, I'm going to just go decompress and chill out.
Mm.
And I go up on the rooftop in a bathrobe and the door closes behind me.
Oh,
and I didn't have anything. I didn't think I needed a key to get back from the roof.
It just only opens one side.
Yeah. And it locked, and I just started laughing so hard. I just had...
How long were you up there?
Like 11 hours.
How'd you get down eventually?
The next morning, called to a groundskeeper that was finally out in the morning, and they got security to come up.
You didn't have a phone or anything on you?
Nope.
Damn.
Just trying. I had two joints, a bag of bath salts for the jacuzzi.
For the jacuzzi.
A towel. It was a jacuzzi. A towel and a bathroom.
Damn.
And I got up.
I would have quit at that point. I would be like, I'm not doing this again.
Hours, dude.
That's wild.
That's rough.
That is so wild.
Nobody was concerned.
Yeah, I was going to say, was anybody worried about, like, where's Zach right now?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Hotels are fun.
Yeah, hotels are. That's one of the best parts of tour. I
disagree.
It makes it interesting.
Oh yeah, for sure. I always think that to me that's something that's just so fascinating about being a musician when you're forced to have a sort of semi domesticated relationship with other people that you don't know that well. When you're forced in that situation, I find it fascinating because some people do really great and can hold it together, and other people just fold under pressure.
Immediately.
It is immediately tough, like when, well, I guess it depends on the conditions you're touring under, but like, I feel like that's most people.
Buses are
like cramming into a van with like a bunch of people, that it can be tough.
Oh, man, even that tour we were talking about. So we cut a record like a couple weeks before we left, I think 2 weeks before we went on that tour, we cut a record. And the drummer that was supposed to do the record dropped out. And so Nick, the fellow we were talking about, he stepped in because he was the drummer for the person for the other band that we were going on tour with. And so they recommended him. They're like, hey, he's free for these dates. Come in and he can cut it. And then it's perfect because he knows the stuff for the tour. So we thought, easy, right? And then when we got on the road, and it was great. I mean, Nick was such an awesome guy. But we got on the road and it was us. So it was me, Brian, our bass player, Nick, and then these three girls, the Wolf Sisters. Check them out because they're all fucking fantastic. And it was all of us stuck in a van for like, I don't know how many weeks. And it was hilarious. It was
like 2 weeks?
I think it was like two, maybe 3 weeks. Yeah. It was hilarious. Like, because you never know what those dynamics are going to be like. You know what I mean? Like, you never know how people are going to be on the road.
Yeah.
And when you're forced in that situation, I always think it's something hilarious is just bound to happen, whether it's good or bad.
I've been pretty fortunate, honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't had too many issues. I feel like I get really lucky though. I like end up hiring friends that I've known for a long time.
That's probably the way to do it.
Yeah, you spend enough time playing with them and stuff. Like you get to know them.
Yeah, Brian's been on every tour I've ever done, with the exception of my first tour when I was like in college. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it helps to have someone that you can, even if you're unsure of maybe some other external forces, to have someone you can go back to and be like, okay, we got to hold down the fort.
Yeah. Know?
I feel like I do pretty well.
Brian is the best thing is, person is
like,
on
if
tour.
If you're on tour and you have like 2 weeks to go, like, dude, just go with the flow. Like you gotta deal with two more weeks of this shit. Like there are some people who just like with like they need to have it their way and like, no, we're doing it this way. Yeah. And it's mm-hmm. like, it doesn't work that way with, if you're in a big group of people, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, Brian is quite genuinely the easiest person to be with on the road. He just goes with, and some people can do that really easily, and they can just kind of slip into that mindset of, like, by the end of that tour, again, and this is, we're not speaking ill of the dead, Nick was the
good guy, just a great
guy. No, but a fucking great guy. And by the end of the tour, again, which was maybe 3 weeks, it was not a long tour. By the end of it, they wouldn't let me sit in the van next to Nick. like there was a rule. Casey's not allowed to sit in the van next to Nick, which was hilarious because then we'd get out of the van and like everyone would be totally fine. Like everyone would be chill and hang. But yeah, I guess, you know, you find what works for you, you know?
Yeah, ain't that the truth?
God. Yeah, it's what are some, I'm always curious about shows that stick out in your mind as being memorable. Because for me, there's sort of, I don't want to even say landmark ones, because it's not like they're of any great importance, but there are certain shows in my mind that for whatever reason stick. And I'm always curious what those shows are for other people, because it's usually something rather mundane that keeps it in there. It's not like playing for some massive crowd sometimes it can be that, but a lot of times it's just weird happenstance that keeps them up there. Are there any particular shows that you just kind of can't knock out of your head?
No, I knock them all out of my head.
do you have a favorite one you've ever played? Is there one that stands out?
I don't know. I love all of them.
Do you have a least favorite one you've ever played?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
I could name that one.
Which one's that?
In KC, I saw in his eyes, it was the same show.
Well, I want to hear Zach's least favorite show first.
Yeah, because I'm so self-deprecating about my own performances and stuff. Like, it would take me forever to even think of something that I...
Dude, me too.
It's my favorite.
Which...
But I've had some shows that, like... And it's so funny, because it never has to do with the band or myself. It has to do with...
Oh, never. Never.
Existential circumstances. Like, man, when I was younger, I don't know. I put a lot of hustle when I was younger. I was, like, street performing a lot, and I was playing these beach bars on Cape Cod. And there's this one spot in particular I used to play it a lot. And I remember one night, this... like bachelorette party of women come in and they're tanked, and they weren't like the fun kind of tanked, and they came up and they were requesting these songs, and I was like, lady, I don't know these songs, I'm sorry. And they ended up getting into like a yelling match with me back and forth. And this bar, it was not big, but they used to like just pack it with as many people as they could until the police would show up. I will proudly say that I had that place shut down twice because of overcapacity, because of some crazy shows that we played in there. I got them shut down twice. That was a proud moment when the cops walked up. First time it was scary. Second time I was like, yes. Got it. Yes. But the first time I was like, I look at the cop and I was like, you're not my boss. And I look up and I see the manager at the back of the club being like, stop. And I was like, oh, okay, sorry. But I was playing at this bar, and these ladies were, everyone else were locals. Like it was just a bunch of people that were there. And these ladies just wanted to pick a fight. They're all hammered and wanted to pick a fight. And I was drunk as hell, too, and was willing to put up a fight. And I'm firing back because I know everyone there. So I'm like, I'm going to just say some outrageous shit. And I was just throwing these insults, waiting for the security to come and take them away. And like,
just nothing happened.
Yeah. So then I try to like divert and I'm like, I'm going to play a song now. And I'm like trying to play a song. And all of a sudden I see a piece of chicken fly by my head. This is the one and only time this has ever happened to me. I see a piece of chicken fly by my head and I just stop. And I was just like, I don't know who you think you are. And I just tore into this lady. I was like, I'm just trying to make a living. I'm fucking, I think I was like 20 years yeah. old. I was like, I'm just trying to do it. And I'm freaking out. The whole crowd is cheering me on as I'm just like berating these women.
Throwing chicken back.
Oh yeah. I was like, I don't know how pathetic of a human you have to be to throw chicken at like a person in general. Let alone, yeah, and I'm freaking out. And eventually they get these ladies up. The security doesn't start walking them out of the club. And I start the na 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 chant and had them all, whole club doing it as they walked out.
That's pretty glorious. That sounds pretty good though.
Yeah, that sounds like a good time to me.
A good memory.
The chicken flying by though, they were mean.
Mm. Yeah, that was not cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't say I've ever had anything thrown at me.
I see, I would rather, as a performer, this is probably
I got whacked in the head in college with a mic during a set from a drunk guy and ended up like tussling with that dude. And then it just turned into a whole thing.
Was the set really that bad or not deserved?
Man, they served them drinks cheap.
Oh God.
They were cheap. So people were having a grand old time. That club was wild. I'm not even going to name the place.
Yeah.
That place was just shut down.
I would almost, I'm one of those people, this is probably goes against my own safety, but I'm one of those people who would rather a malicious crowd than an impartial crowd. You know, like I would rather someone to bicker against than someone who just, there's nothing worse on my end than a crowd that just doesn't give a flying fuck.
I worked at this club in college. I will not name it because this is going to, it could implicate people. If you know about the place, they'll understand. But the guy that I was working for was using the place to launder money for nefarious reasons. And I,
as opposed to non-nefarious laundering,
I couldn't figure out what he was doing, and then I figured it out. Uh-huh. And I was just playing music and working there, so it didn't really do nothing to me.
Yeah.
But like, it was an insane run that they had there, and I mean, we put on some killer shows.
Oh, you've told me about this place before.
Yeah. It was a gem. It was a cash cow. It was especially for like a 19-year-old. I was like, it was too good.
Yeah. I think I've heard this story.
Yeah.
And I won't go too deep into it, but it was wild. It was fun. We basically, I mean, we had like run of that place because we would make that guy so much fun. Play these shows. He would be like, fucking whatever, dude. Do whatever you want. Yeah. If you guys are going to pull this for your shows, you can whatever. He used to call me and be like, yeah, you can tell people you're my manager. You're like, whatever, like of this club.
You're like, sir, I'm 16.
Dude, no, but I was like 19 and like this dude like offered me an opportunity and I just took it and rolled with it.
Yeah, you should have
started making a lot of money. I was like, why don't we just like do bands? This club was so close to the campus. I was like, why don't we just do bands and like market? Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm not paying for that. And I was like, we can print pamphlets. We can go walk around. There's 14,000 people right there. And I was like, and a bunch of them will come and hang. So we started like just pamphleting over all over campus and town. And within like three shows, that place was insane.
Nice.
Yeah.
Was that real? Was that how you did it? It was just.
Yeah.
Handing out flyers.
I took a cut and basically cut in a couple of buddies. And we just worked together to like make posters and do stuff and just go promote it. And we're doing like marketing stuff and basic stuff.
Yeah.
But it worked. And like, we were then, I mean, we started making like, I mean, for how old we were, it was kind of like
real
crazy.
Money,
for, it was kind of crazy. Making like 2 weeks worth pay for like an evening after the split.
Yeah, that's not bad. And yeah, not bad.
That was the first place I had a gun pulled on me.
What was that story?
Oh, dude, that place was horrific. It had a not good history. Like there, I guarantee you at least three people died there.
Damn.
Yeah.
What was the, so who pulled the gun on you?
One of the security guards. He was fucked up and trying to be funny. And I walk in and he just fucking whips his gun out and fucking starts approaching me. And I was like, what the fuck, dude? And I have like a bag of fucking like $2,000 in cash with weed and other stuff. And I was like, and he just comes, I walk in the room and he just comes up with this pistol. And I was like, what the fuck, dude? And then they all, everyone in the room bursts out laughing. And I'm just like frozen there for a second. And I was like, okay. I think I was like 20 when that happened.
That's terrifying.
Yeah. That club was great. When I, it made good money. We had fun.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. That place
was what it needed to be for that time of your life.
Yeah. It was right next to a church. It was great.
Perfect.
Literally, it was like 10 feet. That's hilarious.
Kind of ideal, actually.
Oh, dude, it was insane.
Yeah, those are the gigs that stick with you. The wonky ones. Yeah.
Oh, all those ones at that club were wild.
Did you ever play there?
Oh,
did you perform there?
Yeah.
Because I knew you put them on, but I didn't know if you ever performed there.
Oh, yeah. No, I played a bunch of them.
Okay.
Yeah. And then that's how I got up with the Berkeley bands.
Mm. Okay. That makes
sense. Shout out Bear Salon.
There you go.
Shout out
the Wombs.
Yeah.
The Wombs.
I don't think I heard of them.
Dude, they were sick.
I remember
too.
Bear Salon.
Bear Salon, yeah.
What was the name?
That's
Jack?
Hilarious.
The lead singer, Jack?
Something like that.
That big burly dude. I think
it was
Jack.
I think it was it Jack?
I don't remember.
Yeah. I mean, this was like 14, 15. I mean, yeah, it was a long time ago.
Yeah. A while ago.
But yeah, I would like hire the bands and give them free drugs and pay them well and feed them and give them free booze and be like, tell the other good bands that they can come down here and make a killing and they can crash my couch and lose no money.
Yeah.
It was great. It was a fun deal.
I should have gotten Stig that gig. It would have been all over.
Dude, we had some wild bands. There's this one band that kind of blew up on the West Coast called Da Best. That was from that region.
That name sounds really familiar for some reason, but I can't
like reggae
place
dub.
It. Probably not Da Best.
No, they're good. They're good. I like those
I was
guys.
Just fucking around.
No, they used to come and play that club too, and they kind of blew. They actually did, like, they kind of blew up out there.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
For some reason, that name sounds like that familiar. Scene I don't know why. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. I mean, they toured a lot. They did a bunch of.
Gotcha.
I want to say maybe Sublime with Rome.
Okay.
They did or something. And I know they toured with the Wailers, too.
Oh. Yeah. I never really did band work out there when I was in Boston. It was always just songwriter stuff.
Yeah. The indie bands were tight back then up there. Because I used to hang around, like, we used to go to the heavy metal. I was big in the heavy metal scene up there. Like, not performing, just, like...
Were you really?
Just spectating.
I feel like the...
Yeah, Worcester, dude. Worcester had some
like, the indie
awesome
math
bands.
Rock thing was, like,
oh,
big.
That was my thing in high school. Oh,
I feel
Lord,
like that was big
thing.
In Boston.
Well, that time,
like, anytime you went to, like, a house party in Alston, it was always that stuff.
Because I'm talking, like, 2010 to 2014. Like, Worcester had some... incredible bands up there that were like, I mean, like bands called like Vanna or like there's band Devil Wears Prada and these heavy metal bands. That scene up there was cool. They had some really good stuff. And then like you come down here and a lot of those bands would play like the N, but Nashville obviously didn't have a huge like scene for screamo heavy metal.
Yeah, what were you into in high school?
Man, I had this English teacher. I don't remember a lot.
I didn't say who were you into in high school. No, I'm just kidding.
I had this English teacher. I don't remember a lot of the names of my teachers, but he was cool. His name was Doc Souza. And he introduced me to, he was like a doctorate or had a doctorate in English literature. So everyone just called him Doc. But Doc was a really cool guy. And, he was one of the few people that treated people like adults and would give them information like that. And then whether you received it or not was kind of at your volition. But he showed me some awesome bands. And like one of the main bands, like early on when I was younger, that I really took to is Deer Tick. From Providence. And obviously they all live here now. But a couple of those guys went to the same high school as me. And they were older, but he introduced me to their music and then introduced me to them one day when I was young, in high school. And their music was like back then, their first couple of records, I was like hook, line, and sinkered. And this one guy just introduced me to all of these different Indian folk bands. And at the time I was listening to a lot of blue, like we were going to a lot of bluegrass stuff, a lot of like Indian bluegrass stuff, honestly. Boston, I mean, at that time too, in Boston, there was a ton of that up there. Like the bluegrass scene was really popping off 10, 15 years ago is when it really started to like really vamp up. What was the question?
I was just talking about stuff you were into when you were younger. Cause I'm always interested with this. I'm always interested with this kind of music, how people kind of stumble into it. Cause most people, you know, when most people are 12 years old, they're not like, I want to write country songs. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't,
well, see,
that's
weird.
Not usually how it works. So people kind of usually find some other way in somehow. And I'm always curious what that is for people.
Dude, when I was 12, my dad gave me a cheap guitar and taught me a few chords and gave me a Steve Goodman, a John Prine, and a Carter Family album.
That's all you need right there. That's a good parenting.
I'm not even
right
kidding.
Good
That's parenting. Exactly what he did, and here we are.
Nice.
That sounds like a good recipe.
Yeah. He showed the good stuff. Like, there is, the, I mean.
Yeah, I got a lot of, like, early on good music taste from my dad, too.
Yeah. I mean, our first concert, they took us to see Lyle Lovett. I was 7 years old. They couldn't get a babysitter, so they were like, taking him. And I remember that show. It was like, I remember that was the first show. I mean, it was the first show I ever saw.
I met him when we were working at the hotel. I went up to him and shook his hand.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I was like, oh my God, it's fucking Lyle Lovett.
Oh my God. Yeah. I remember. Cause I was helping Dwight Yoakam. Cause they all came. Remember they all came in that weekend. I remember cause I was helping him with his shit and I just hear somebody yelling, Dwight. And I was like, whoa, who That's the fuck funny. Is walking up right now? And it was Lyle Lovett walks up.
So you saw him when you were 7 years old.
Yeah. And I was like, I remember very clearly in that moment being like, I want to fucking do that.
Was that your first concert ever?
Yep. Nice. And then a couple months later, we saw Bruce Hornsby.
What age did you like pick up a guitar and start playing?
12.
12. Gotcha.
Yeah. I played piano throughout my childhood and I had this one teacher I went to and you have your parents showing you one thing. And then you have somebody telling you this is what you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
And as you get older, you know what's right and wrong. But like, I don't know. I was learning fucking Bach and Beethoven. I didn't need to know Bach or Beethoven. Totally. I don't need to know Bach or Beethoven. I've done just fine without both of them. I appreciate them and like them and like listening to them and stuff. But like, you know what I mean? I was like sitting there having my dad be like, this is Bill Monroe and this is John Prine. And like, this is like these incredible they were taking us to bluegrass concerts growing up. And I was like, I don't want to play this stuff. I want to play that stuff. And they're like, well, you have to learn this stuff first.
I had like an almost identical experience with my first guitar teacher. Cause I started playing guitar a little bit. My parents were like, oh, like you seem like you're interested. Let's get you lessons. First teacher I had, like they like first lesson, just put like sheet music in front of me. And it's like, Mary Had a Little Lamb on, and I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, this is stupid. I'm trying to shred.
From that point,
I feel like is such a horrible way to like,
oh, the worst way to teach someone.
Teach somebody music. Cause like what kid is going to be like, oh, this is awesome.
How old
I'm
going to
practice this a lot now.
How old were you when you started taking lessons? 12-ish, somewhere around there?
Trying to remember. Probably about then. Well, I was actually a drummer before.
Yeah.
And then my brother had a guitar laying around the house and I like learned a couple things on it and then like kept like, you know, occasionally like learning a new thing here and there. And then eventually I just like I liked the guitar better. Probably I took a few lessons when I was like 12 and it just like didn't really last long.
I only took one. I just never took another. I'm playing fluently, but like I could play mediocrely like 5 in different instruments. And a lot of them were just mom and dad would get something cheap and you just sit there and
figure it out.
Bang on it until you figure it out.
It's the way to do it.
Yeah,
dude. And it was like, especially when we were kids, like at the time,
I think lessons and more formal training kind of, I feel like you got to learn the intuitive part first and then like later on down the line,
kind of technical,
the connecting the technical to that can really be helpful. But I feel like if you start with the technical, it's like kind of it's almost like learning it backwards. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, because I feel like, opinion.
Like you should learn the music first and then the technical side.
And of all it. Of it, none of it matters at all when you're a kid unless you give a rat's ass. Yeah. Like, so like my grandpa taught me, you know, like cowboy chords and stuff when I was really little. And then when I was 8, I started taking guitar lessons. Just something I kind of had to do for school, essentially. And, you know, it was just one of those things I did. I didn't really think of it at all. It was just, you know, oh, God, I got to work on this for this week, that kind of thing, you know. And it wasn't until I was 12 that it became obsessive. But nothing changed other than my vantage point.
I didn't get obsessive about it, and probably until I was like maybe 15.
Okay.
Which sucks because I feel like that's a little late. Like in school, I met kids.
Hey Brian,
like,
this
yeah,
really
I played,
fucked your
I
guitar.
I practiced every single day since I was 3, and they were just like godlike at their instrument. And I was like, fuck, this guy's got a decade on me. I feel like I could have used that, but it is what it is.
No, you come to it when you're supposed to come to it. Yeah, we were actually just having this conversation. It's funny. I feel like for most people, that window of obsession opens around 12 to 15, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
That's when, for whatever reason, if you're going to do this thing, that's when you go all in.
Yeah, I feel like that's the age you kind of just start, like, more thinking for yourself
yeah.
and figuring yourself out. And
absolutely. I think that's true if you wanted to be just about anything. If you thought, oh, I want to build airplanes, or I want to be a plumber or yeah. whatever, like, it's probably the age where...
Yeah, I started performing when I was 14.
Yeah. Yeah, it's probably yeah. around the same, yeah.
Yeah.
Or actually younger than that, because I
was a freshman.
Oh, right here. There
you go. When I first played. Like, to an audience.
Yeah.
And then I started playing the clubs more when I was like 18, 19. Mm. And they were... yeah. We won't name them. Some of them are fine establishments. They're still cranking.
There you
and
go.
I love very dearly.
There you
they
go.
Let me make money when I needed to when I was younger.
I didn't make any money when I played when I was younger. I feel like all the venues in San Diego were like kind of the pay to play. Like,
you oh, for sure.
Sell tickets ahead of
I
time.
I can't tell you how many people, how many friends in high school would have to pay to play like House of Blues and shit like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or what was that one in Mira Mesa? I feel like that's where everyone had their first show.
See, I was the
young. I'm sure if you said the name. I'm sure if you said the name, I'd be like, yeah, that one. But
see, on that circuit up there, I was the young
Epicenter.
One.
So did you play there?
Yeah. No, I
think that was the first place I played.
I'm trying to think if I ever played there or not. I certainly was there.
And
but...
I remember just grinding so hard, just begging everyone in my high school to buy this fucking ticket.
I'm trying to think.
That was basically my first performance too.
Yeah.
It's like a high school gig. Where you were like, it was like it was called Charitably Loud.
Mm-hmm.
And they would raise money for some sort of charity. Everyone would put a big show on. And you would just like, I don't know.
Be loud.
Be loud.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun.
What kind of bands were you playing in though?
Oh, just like rock.
Yeah, the good stuff. The stuff you want to play when you're 13, 14.
Yeah, we'd go see Blink. We'd go see Manchester Orchestra.
Yeah.
All that angsty stuff.
So I'm curious, because I know you grew up with this kind of music. What was your way of finding it as your own person? What was the first time that you realized, now I do want to do that?
Like play music?
No, do this kind of music.
In 2016, I went to the Groove Record Store, and I was going through the vinyl. And I found this record in there called Arms Full of Empty by Buck Owens. And I like came home and I put the record up and my friends hit me up and they were like, let's go out and see these shows and stuff. And we all went out and got fucking wrecked and got really drunk and really stoned. And I came back at, I don't know, like 1 or 2, and I started spinning that record, just blaring it. And I called my dad about 4 and woke him up. I was like, man, you got to listen to this record. This is the best record I've ever heard in my life. It's changing my life. I don't remember this phone call at all. And I remember the next day I woke up and I look at my dad. I like call my dad back because there was a missed call when I woke up. And he was like, "Hey, you having a good morning? You remember calling me at 4 last night?" I was like, "No." He's like, "You want me to go listen to that fucking record now?" And I was like, "It's good, man." And he got his out what he needed to. And then we were talking about it. And he was like, "You do know that Buck Owens was like your grandpa's favorite, right?" And I was like, "No, I did not know that." And I don't remember listening to the record. So I went back and I listened to the record sober the next morning. And the intro kick of the record is, I would argue, one of the most iconic. Like, it, you can't really find it online. It's not digitized, really. So, like, if you have the vinyl, you can listen to it. But, like, it's such a classic Bakersfield honky-tonk record. And, like, the opening lick is just this Ralph Mooney lick that is, in my opinion, he's one of the most iconic pedal steel players of all time. But, like, that intro just had me hooked. I was like, Like, I'd been listening to this stuff for a long time, and I was like, I think I was 21 or 22. And I was like, I want that forever. And I just started fucking leaning as hard as I could into listening, collecting records and finding all the obscure shit that's buried out, especially here in Nashville, because there's so many, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So many people had records from yesteryear that are all away that they did two production.
I say this all the time.
I do love vinyl for that reason.
Oh, just, dude, you can find
just random shit that you never would have listened to.
Oh, yeah.
And it ends up just being so good. And that because was, you have the vinyl, you commit to listening to it.
Last night.
At least a few times, and, like, you'll just find music you never normally would have.
Yeah. Like last night we were listening to, I want to look this up so I say his name right. A dude named Gamble Rogers, who is like a honky tonker and put out this incredible record. And I think it did one run, one release. You can't find his stuff online anywhere. Like he's a pretty obscure country artist, but he does this incredible version of Honky Tonk Heroes on that record. And me and a couple of my honky tonk buddies last night just were smoking joints and cigarettes. Well, I wasn't smoking cigarettes. I've got Zen now, so it's just weed for me, sadly. But
we all make mistakes.
I miss tobacco.
Me too, brother.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, we were just hanging around listening to like obscure records that my buddy Ivan collects that are just, oh, they're so good. He's got so many good obscure records at his place.
Yeah, it is. I mean, one of the things I do like now is how easy it is to access so much stuff. There's definitely stuff you still can't get, but like when we were in college, so Riley, my roommate and I, we lived our first 2 years of college, we lived in the dorms right above our library. Mm-hmm. And so I studied traditional music, traditional American folk music in school, and I would go to the library and once a day we would pull 4 CDs each. I think that was the max, whatever it was. Then we'd bring them back to our dorm and we'd rip them onto our computers. And so for 2 years we did this, and I was getting just all of the stuff that you couldn't, at that time, you couldn't find it anywhere else. And within 5 years, we'll even, it's all out there. Yeah. Like you can just find it. It's amazing now. I mean, I love it. Well, I love how easy it is to find.
It's allowing people to like, I mean, you can go back and recut these songs.
Yeah.
Way down the road. You know what I mean? Like, and there's so many artists doing that right now where they'll tuck in songs from the 70s and 80s. And those songs end up being their, like a big shot at their traction.
For sure.
I mean, like, look at Charlie Crockett pulled. Do like James Tom Ferry, it's like a Tanya Tucker tune, did an incredible cover of it.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, his cover of That's How I Got to Memphis. I mean, he openly says that's one of the big reasons that song got his name out there.
For sure.
Redoing that song.
Yeah.
And then you got newer artists out of the country scene, like Emily Nenny.
Yeah.
And she's got this one cover. I'm going to just double check to make sure that I say this one correctly as well. But she did this one cover.
Yeah, I haven't heard her play in a while.
If This Is Just a Game. And that's an old David Allan Coe song that she covered.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Great, great song. And he made, I mean, he made a huge hit of it. And then she put that on a record, I think, a couple years ago.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of people that's working for them.
What's his name? Benjamin Todd. Mm-hmm. He did Hubbardville Store, which is like an old, that's like an old, old song. Yeah. And they put that on Lost Dogs record that just came out. There's like a ton of people that are doing that, that are pulling those cool songs.
Yeah. It's working for them. I mean, I think it's great.
Oh yeah. It pays homage to the people that came before us, you know?
For sure.
Which is like, that's why I played that dulcimer earlier. You know what I mean? That's like one of the older American traditions.
Yeah. For years I've wanted to buy a dulcimer. I've never pulled the trigger on it.
Turns out the cheap ones are the good ones.
Should be standing in the shadow of Gene Ritchie, but
thanks Timbo for letting me use that.
Yeah, it's funny. It's
shout out Timbolo. Go listen to Timbolo.
Yes.
Timbo
everyone go listen to Timbo. Yeah, I remember the first, this is only related to a dulcimer. I remember the first tour I ever went on. We left right after Gene Ritchie died. And for that tour, I did a version of Hangman, like an arrangement of Hangman that I'd come up with. And to this day, I love that arrangement. I still play it because I don't know why I came up with that arrangement the way that I did, but yeah, it's funny how certain songs stay with you. And I need to buy me a goddamn dulcimer. That's what I'm saying.
There's this one cover that I've been playing out a lot lately. I was playing with Timbo in Texas a couple months ago in Austin. And he was backing me in the band, and like he was playing lead for me, and I was like in the set before him. And I just called the tempo wrong of this song. So they double timed it on this song called You Won't Have Her Long by Marty Robbins. It's off this record called the RFD record from 1973. And it's kind of like a slower kind of grooving song. And they double timed
it. They were just cooking.
Yeah. So I just said, fuck it, and I'll shuffle it. And we did it as a shuffle instead and just cooked it as like a dancing tune. And Tim just leans up. He's like, yeah, that was the best version you've done of that song. Just do it that way. And like, I've just been playing it more. It's, you know what I mean? You just find new arrangements.
When Timbo tells you to do something, you do it.
Yeah. I mean, like he's a great example of it, of like finding old music and like making it your own. Cause like you got to find your own soul in that stuff. So like a lot of the songs that I play, they're covers, but like I'm doing a different arrangement of the original song almost every time.
That being said, that man could read you the phone book. And if he sang you the phone book, you would love it.
Yeah.
That man does not have a non-musical bone in his body.
No, ain't that the truth?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and frankly, in my head, it's like just the more ways people can get to good music, the better. I feel like there is a feeling of, occasionally I get the feeling that people like hoarding this stuff. They think, okay, I don't want anyone else to, this is my thing. You know, whatever kind of music it is, we just kind of naturally, I think for whatever reason, have this inclination. I always think, no, it's the more people that like good shit, the better.
Yeah. I don't know. That man has personally taught me more than most with like guitar and singing and.
He is a phenomenal guitar. Anytime Brian and I watch a set that Tim's playing, one of us will just say, God damn, he's such a good guitar player. He is a phenomenal guitar player.
Yeah, he's great.
He really is.
Well, he learned a lot from Mark.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I mean, playing with that guy.
Yeah.
Mark Thornton.
Yeah, Mark Thornton's an absolute animal. That man has played with some big ones.
Yeah, he did. I think he was with Jerry Reed for 9 years.
Yeah.
8 or 9 years. Unbelievable picker.
Really is. And he can play all kinds of stuff too.
Yeah, he's got his own stuff out too.
Yeah. He would be a great person to talk to. I haven't talked to Mark in a while, but he would be a fantastic person to talk to.
That'd be awesome. I'd have a lot of questions.
Hell of a player. Super nice guy too.
I'll give you guys a list. Because that just made me
there
think.
There you go. Yeah, there you go.
It just made me think.
Yeah.
Some of them, you'll definitely have to go bleep some stuff out.
Oh, yeah. Most of them won't say their address, though.
So. I mean, what are they going to do?
That's fair.
Dude, what if this gets a million views and you got psychos showing up at your house.
Zach, I don't think you have anything to worry about, buddy.
Yeah, you're right. No one's gonna watch.
Todd Snyder once said, "Every good musician is ready to bail in 15 minutes or less."
Exactly. If there is one man on this planet I would want to sit down with and do this with, other than yourself, obviously, Mr. Zach Willey, it would be that man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would love
Doesn't
to take that man's
live
brain.
In Nashville?
Yeah, he's in East somewhere.
Probably get him one day. We'll make it happen. One day down the road.
There you go. I'm curious, who are some of your, at this point in life, who are some of the artists that you hold in highest esteem? Who are the people that you really think, whatever that person's doing, I respect that.
I don't know. There's a lot of people that are kind of cruising up through the, do you mean like coming up through the ranks right now?
No, or just in general. I mean, it doesn't have to be, thank you, Brian. It doesn't have to be someone contemporary. It could be someone in the past, but who are the people at this point in your life that you look at their career and you think, I like that. I like that a lot.
I don't know.
That's a hard question.
Like you're speaking to like, oh, that's pretty broad.
No, but okay, I should say it like this. Who are Brian, you want to ask it, dumb it down a little bit for me?
No. Dumb it down, dude.
I'll let you try again.
Thanks, buddy. Who are some favorites?
Wrong here?
No, you're right.
Thank you, Brian.
Terribly phrased.
I love you too. Okay, yeah. Well, most of this is I'm fucking retarded. who are some of your absolute favorites? The people that you think, no, I'm going to carry this with me for as long as I'm here.
I'm sorry.
I'm gonna start with old and work my way forward, I guess.
Perfect.
I don't know. Like,
that's usually how my sex life goes, so.
We gotta rephrase this question, dude. You're making me think too hard.
Oh, God. Okay.
Yo, new artists to check out.
Oh, okay, that's sure. That's what I asked. Thank you.
Like, I would say check out this. I met this kid this year, Jake Cohn.
Okay.
18-year-old kid. He's from Virginia. Sings his butt off. Really, really talented singer. And he just opened for the band, another band that I will lead into, Lost Dog Street Band.
Yeah.
Like, obviously I'm tight with them and their story is absolutely wild. But I played a festival with Jake, I think like a month and a half ago up in Indiana, and met him. And saw his set and I was like, wow, this kid's got some crazy pipes on him. Another dude, Joshua Quimby. He's a New Englander that's down here. He's from Connecticut. But he does this really cool folk, like country, Americana. I don't know, he's friggin' awesome. He's got a great voice too. Have you listened to any of Willow Avalon stuff?
No, I haven't.
She's good. She's really talented. And she like looks like she seems to carry herself like really, really well. Like as an artist, and
yeah, I'll have to check her out.
Yeah, she. She's kind of, I think she's blowing up right now. She's been playing some like big shows and her music's awesome. Seems like a hard worker.
All right, Brian, how about you phrase a question then here, buddy boy? If we're going to keep, no.
I got nothing.
Nothing. Oh, man. All right.
What's your future plans for like current goals of what you're trying to do? Any, things you're trying to look forward to or accomplish in the near future?
I was thinking about a cult.
There you go. That's a good one. You would be a great cult leader, dude.
You would.
I'd be the first to join.
I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah. Put me on the email list.
Yeah. I don't know. I want to just keep putting music out.
Just keep doing your thing.
God, I love playing and writing and performing. I meet the nicest people doing it. Met you guys doing it.
Sadly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't even remember how we met, frankly. I remember just hanging out. I have no recollection of first meeting you or
probably
anything.
Probably parties at the house. Before I moved.
Yeah, out. Yeah, I'm sure it was, yeah.
Probably same with you, actually.
Yeah, I don't even remember. I think I, like, just saw you around for a while because we were kind of hanging out at the same places, and then eventually I was like, hey, we see each other a lot. What's up?
I was like, who's the hottie with the braids?
Something like that. Yeah, that was it.
I don't know, dude. 4:15. I won't say the last. I won't say the full thing.
You can rewind for that, but
I don't know. That place is.
It's special. It's yeah, special.
It's wild.
Yeah, a lot of good memories in that house.
Yeah, I was like, I feel like at some point that place is gonna get wrote about. There's just been so much weird.
Or yeah, but they're gonna find the bodies. Too.
Yeah,
gonna make a documentary about it or something.
I mean, it started off.
Alexa can film it.
Three artists started this house up. Like Sterling Drake, Mallory Eagle, and Caitlin Butts.
Yeah, that was the OG. That was the first time I was over there.
Yeah. And then it kind of like.
I was going to ask you, how are the batteries doing? Because we should have these plugged in.
Okay. So,
we did my first record at the house.
Yeah, I remember that, man. Yeah, because that was the first time I was over there. Is because Sterling and Mal were over there, and Caitlin. And then you came in when Sterling left, right? Is that how it worked? I'm trying to remember the sequence of everything. Because I feel like he left and then came back. I'm so hazy on the
Sterling
whole.
Was there for a while. No, he was already gone. There was this other banjo player that was living there named Carson.
Oh, yeah.
Who's the number 3 state-ranked arm wrestler.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah. And he took off. He had to go. He had to go back to the oil fields and work in Oklahoma with his family. And I was homeless with COVID. crashing in my buddy's apartment so that I wouldn't be outside. And in December, end of December, it was like right around Christmas. And he called me and was like, yo, I know you're looking for a place. And I got to go in like 3 days. And I was like, yeah, I would like to not be homeless anymore. Thank you. And I took that spot up and I've been there for, I don't know.
Been a minute.
3.5 years.
Yeah.
From homeless to not so homeless.
Well, you know.
And sure. We took in a lot of homeless people too. I
don't know. Yeah, it's a special place. Yeah, a lot of, again, like have a lot of good memories in there.
At least 15 or 20 records cut there.
Yeah. We cut all those singles I put out last year there.
Oh, dude. Yeah. It would be incalculable when you start breaking it down into like individual recordings with people and stuff.
Yeah, I just cut a harmonica. Recordings. I cut a couple harmonica tracks there last week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's never ending. Chris will never leave.
We're not running a business out of our house. We don't charge anybody. Mm-hmm. It's all for free. It's all for free.
Yeah, sexual favors only.
For music.
Yes. Anyway, well, I gotta say, I'm really, really glad you did this, man. Like, yeah, I'm really
this
fucking glad.
Great.
Me too.
This is really great.
With you guys.
Hell yeah! I mean, in my head, this is just an excuse to just shit talk and hang out. I mean, frankly, that's the reason why I'm interested in doing this, and just to talk to interesting people that we don't know as well. But if nothing else, Brian and I have said this a million times, it's just a good excuse to just hang out with people that we love hanging out with. So
yeah,
so I'm really glad that you did, and the song sounded fucking great,
yeah,
man. Like really,
those were awesome.
The new stuff you've been doing, you know, God knows that I love the old stuff too, but the new stuff that you've been writing is top tier, man.
Hey, dude.
Keep it up.
Heartbreak breeds the good ones. No, that's good.
Yeah, I love you, buddy. Thank you for doing this.
Love you,
yeah,
too, man.
Come back and do it again sometime.
I will.
Later on, we'll.
Yeah, hell yeah.
I'll be on again.
About a year.
Yeah. The tell-all. All right, see you, man. Thank
see
you.
See
all right. Nice, dude.
Fuck yeah, boys. That was fun.
That was good.
That was a lot of fun.
Pretty good.
Goddamn.
Real smooth.
Hell yeah.
Get the heroin.